Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All Things Therapy with Lisa Tahir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Things Therapy. I'm your host, Lisa Tahir. I'm a licensed clinical social worker practicing as an intuitive psychotherapist. And the theme of my podcast is that we are changing consciousness one conversation at a time through this show. I appreciate all of you who have been listening in to my interviews each week. I'm over the 3-year mark of podcasting every Thursday. I love it, and I wouldn't be loving it if it wasn't for every one of you who have listened and subscribed and shared this podcast and let me know just how much you've enjoyed it, even reaching out to me to be my guest. I've had many of you on once you email me. So I invite you to please continue to spread this love with everyone you know. You can find me online through my website, which is nolatherapy.com. It's the abbreviation for New Orleans, Los Angeles Therapy. I have private practice offices in both cities, and I also provide FaceTime, Skype, and phone sessions to people worldwide. So reach out if you are looking for a different kind of healing practitioner that I consider myself to be. Please also sign up and join my email list at nolatherapy.com. And to follow this podcast on social media, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, and Twitter under Nola Therapy. And if you're inclined to support my work, I have a crowdfunding campaign through Patreon, and it enables podcasters, authors, artists to have you support our work for as little as $1 a month. You can learn more about that through the website patreon.com/allthingstherapy. So my guest today, I just have been really excited to have him on. In just moments, we are going to be with actor, singer, composer, teacher, and mentor, Kirk Taylor. If you want to follow along, you can go to his website, KirkTaylorOfficial.com. And Kirk's credits include Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket, The Angriest Man in Brooklyn with Robin Williams, Spike Lee's School Days, Death Wish 3 with Charles Bronson, The Sum of All Fears, where he was cast alongside of Morgan Freeman and Ben Affleck, The Last Dragon, and most recently coming out next Friday, April 19th, is the feature film musical Revival, The Experience, which we're going to talk about. I think it's a really unique film. It's a retelling of the Gospel of John in a futuristic and past perspective. It's set in first century Israel, as well as fast forwards to Los Angeles, and I think 2050. So I'm going to be asking Kirk more about that and what that experience was like for him. And Kirk has had over 3 decades in the TV and movie industries and on and off Broadway theater. I've just sensed from him as I've been learning and researching, he has such a deep soulful and spiritual nature and is amazingly approachable, and I'm just delighted, Kirk, to have you on today. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm so happy to be here with you, Lisa, as well.
Me too.
Thank you for that great introduction. That was wonderful.
Oh, you're welcome. I had so much fun learning about you and now being able to talk about everything. So where do you want to start? And I don't want you to miss sharing with us how you were tricked into acting back in high school. So at some point, I would love to hear about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I guess the overall takeaway has been that I've found that there has really been design in the things that I've accomplished, that it was not coincidental. I mean, very often things seem to happen in a, you know, off the cuff way, but it was never that for me. I found out why as I rewinded to hear stories about my family, and I started to understand some of the foundation of my life. For instance, my mom My grandmother told me this. Now, this was a shocking thing to hear as a kid. My mom, at 7 years old, contracted spinal meningitis in 1941.
Oh,
which
wow.
Which is basically it was a death sentence.
Yes.
Because they called my mother and said, they called my grandmother and said, Mrs. Weeks, because she was already in the hospital. They said, Mrs. Weeks, you got to get here right away. Rose is dying. She's not going to make it through the day. And so that's how bad it was. So as a kid, when you hear that, you're like, well, wait a minute. If mom, oh my God, that means I wouldn't, Daddy would have never met her. So I realized that was something had happened. There was an exchange, and my grandmother got on the back of the bus in Washington, D.C. with my aunt and was praying out loud to my aunt's embarrassment. They got to the hospital. A doctor walked up to my grandmother and just, it was very direct. He says, I'm so sorry, you're too late. Because my mother was expiring in the next room. She was gasping, and she was unconscious. Her brain was swollen against her skull. It's a devastating illness even now. But then they didn't have antibiotics. And my grandmother dropped to her knees, Lisa, right in front of the doctor and Aunt Lee. Aunt Lee tried to get her up. She raised her hands and looked to heaven, and she said, Father, in the name of Jesus, if you save my daughter, Rosemary, I'll dedicate the rest of my life to you. And nurses started running out of my mother's room. The doctor was called back in. He came out shaking his head, and he said, she's not sick. She's not sick. Her brain swelling is gone. I mean, she just sat up. She's sitting there smiling inside the plastic bubble. And my mother said that's all she remembers of it. She said she remembers Aunt Lee and grandmother waving to her inside of that bubble. And so I as I thought back to that, I was like, wow, that was a covenant, a promise that that grandmother made. She lived to be 101. Mm-hmm. Lillian R. Weeks, that was a covenant, and she kept it, but it means that I'm part of the covenant because I'm the fruit of what should not have been. And so as I look back over my life, I started seeing like God's hand in things, in protections, and like I was saved for a purpose. And when I was 9, I did my first play. We did The King and I at camp, and I forget, I played the prince. My mother coached me on that, and I found out later on from her yearbook that we just recently found that she had put down she wanted to be a dramatics teacher. And so then I understood the design in that, that I had come as a fulfillment of that desire. And as my career progressed, we continued to share that dream together. So I started in that was my first play. But the real serious one was in high school when I decided that I was playing basketball my freshman year, and I heard the drama teacher was really tough. In fact, I stepped into a rehearsal when I was a freshman, and she was tough, Sandra Hardy, so much that she scared me, actually. And I was like, yeah, well, I guess my career is over because I'm never going to audition for that lady. And the next year, my cousin Monica said, I wanted a ride home. Me and Clifton needed a ride, her brother. If you've seen Clifton Davis, you've seen Monica Durant Davis. That's her husband. So he's my cousin-in-law. But anyway, Monica had a love for the arts even back then. And I asked for a ride home. It was raining. It was sleeting. She said, oh, yes, I'll give you a ride home if you and Clifton come and audition for the school play. I said, no, I don't think so. Not doing it. No, I already knew I wasn't going to do it. I wanted to in a way, but I would never do it. And she said, well, I'm auditioning. And if you're not auditioning, then you can walk. I said, Monica, it's sleeting outside. She said, yep. You have to audition. So me and her brother, Clifton, my cousin, we went in and auditioned with her. I was crazy. I remember I had to sing something off the cuff. They made me dance. And I got the lead.
Wow.
In the play. We did Cabaret that year, the Joel Grey role. She did the film with Liza Minnelli. I got the lead. Monica got a part in the chorus. She was scratching her head like, wait a minute. You got the lead?
Wow.
And my cousin Clifton didn't get anything. So that was a divine hookup right there. I got hooked because my very, very, very first performance, I didn't know if I was doing good or not. I just was going with this overwhelming passion of my heart. And I came out for my first curtain call, first one. And the audience stood and thundered. And I literally opened my mouth. I had tears welling up in my eyes. I couldn't have imagined that feeling. And I thought at that point, you know what? I'm never leaving.
Mm-hmm.
This is my new home. This is a place where I feel accepted. This is a place where I feel I can express the overflow. As very often artists will tell you, there's kind of an overflow of emotions and and ideas. Sometimes it can make you, if you have an artistic soul, it can make it difficult for you in day-to-day life. But mm-hmm. through the arts, we can find an expression to show our vision, like impressionistically, like Van Gogh did, where we're showing you how we see it, how we feel it. And
how you feel it, yes.
And if we do it right, as Marlon Brando said, our job is to make audiences stop in the middle of eating their popcorn. Like, because they're moved, they're touched, they're shocked, they identify. And that's a deep privilege of being an actor.
You know, I had heard you share in another interview the story of your mother basically dying in the hospital, and your grandmother yeah. and your aunt praying, and just the spontaneous recovery and that miracle. And it brought tears to my eyes, and that she was unafraid to declare a prayer out loud yeah. that saved yeah. your mother's life. And then the subsequent, yeah. as you call them, God winks, which I think yeah. of as confirmations that we are right where we yes. need to be, that you are right yes. where you need to be. Like in that story you just shared with the, you know, I'm not going to give you a ride home unless you audition. And it's like spirit knowing what we need and disguising it in the weirdest of circumstances sometime, but bringing us to where we actually want, what we want to experience. And yeah. I wonder if you could speak to us about more of those moments in your career. You've been in this business for over 30 years.
Oh yeah. I mean, I have found that the ingredient that not only fills up the cup, but overflows the cup is having that connection to God about my spiritual life. And so prayer, I can tell you of stories, and I will share stories of how that prayer just turned it around. Even at times, you know, I do other things besides act. And so I teach. I started mm-hmm. teaching at the Strasbourg Institute some years ago, and I have a list of my students that I'm so proud of, like Charles Malik Whitfield, Jose Zuniga, Chandra Wilson from Grey's Anatomy, Gary Jordan. I mean, a lot of actors. That in itself was a great privilege. But at times I've thought about walking away from acting because, you know, you work, you don't work. It's that freelance lifestyle can be difficult at times. Mm. And so that's why I'm writing scripts. I write music. I sing, I do other things. But at one point I remember we got up in the morning and I said to my wife, I said, you have to pray for me. She said, okay. She said, what about? I said, pray that if I'm supposed to continue to do this, that God would be really clear, because I'm not really working enough. I did the guest star on Chicago Hope, and I did this and that, but it's not enough really. And maybe it's over. Maybe that season's over. And said, would you pray that he would be super, super clear? She said, okay. She prayed for me. She got up. The phone rang before I got out of bed, and I picked it up, and it was my old manager, and it was Martin. And Martin said, Kirk, we were just contacted by a major motion picture, and they want to know your availability next week. And I stood there for a second. I was frozen. Now, remember, we just 30 seconds ago, we had prayed.
Yes.
So I said, yes. I wanted to say, hey, let me check my schedule. But I said, yes, I'm available next week. And I said, what is it? He said, it's called The Angriest Man in Brooklyn. I said, Angriest Man in Brooklyn. It's Spike Lee, because I did a couple of Spike Lee projects. School Days, I'm still in. The other ones I got cut out of. But I said, it's Spike. He said, we don't know. We literally just got the call, which means they got the call while we were praying.
Yes.
While we're praying, the call came in, and they were so excited, they called me immediately before they even researched it. And then I looked, and it was my buddy and one of my favorite directors and people, Phil Alden Robinson. People will know him from Field of Dreams with Kevin Costner and James Earl Jones and Burt Lancaster's last film. He's a wonderful director. I've done like three or four projects with him now, including the one you mentioned, Some of All Fears, Freedom Song for TNT with Danny Glover. But anyway, it was Phil. And within a week, Lisa, I'm pinching myself and looking up to heaven as I'm from the New York area. I have a New York cop uniform with a gun and a badge. I have a New York squad car. I'm on the streets of LA, and there's Robin Williams and Mila Kunis in a major scene that Phil added to the film. They had done a testing. It wasn't written. Phil wrote it and cast me in it.
That's
and
wonderful.
Again, a God wink, or sometimes they call them a God nod too. Both confirmation that you're where you're supposed to be. And so that was another one of those instances where, you know, I often pray. I said, Lord, it says you control the doors. It says what you open, no one can shut. What you shut, no one could open. So take control of the doorways. If it's a door that looks good, but it's not from you, close it. If it's a door that's from you, but it looks like it's closing on me, then turn it around, open the door. Because if they can't shut it, if you don't want it shut.
You know, it surprised me when I had read somewhere that you did with your wife, you know, hey, I don't know that this is what I'm supposed to be doing anymore, that even you have experienced doubt and some confusion even around what is your next step. And then I'm imagining that makes you such a wonderful person to mentor and teach other actors, and how you do incorporate your personal experiences with your mentoring and teaching.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it really helped me to help them, because I could tell them from experience. I could tell them about my successes. I can tell them about the mishaps, the trips along the way. And always with that foundation, which means that if you have a spiritual foundation, it means you always have a resource, even when it seems like the cupboard's bare, even when it seems like there's no gas in the tank, you have a resource, a miraculous resource. And I had learned as a young man that it works. I mean, listen, and I was a seeker. I think that if you're a true seeker, and that's someone who doesn't get comfortable, doesn't do just because it's your tradition or what you were taught, but if you're seeking the truth, then what Grandmother Weeks and Aunt Lee taught me as a kid, the first thing I remember them teaching me, ask and you will receive, seek and you will find, knock and the door will be open for everyone who asks receives, everyone who seeks finds, everyone who knocks the door is open. And so that's something, in the tense that is used in the Greek, it says ask and keep on asking, seek and keep on seeking, knock and keep on knocking. So in other words, you're not being a pest by continually going before God and asking for what you need, or asking for direction, or asking for help, or asking for sustenance in whatever form that you need it. And so I've been able to pass that on to some of them. And I learned things about spirituality in an acting class, you know, stuff that I was not taught, understandings that I got that were not from anybody except from a heavenly source. So, it's been a great, and it just feels so good when you see the light come on with them. And when you see them, well, it's like any father with his kids, right? You want them to do well. Any mother with her children, you want them to succeed. You worry that they're not going to make it. And to see these students of mine, Jesse L. Martin, Karina Lombard, I mean, working at Ben O. Furman, working at such a high level and representing well. At one point, I looked up and saw an episode of a law enforcement show, and I saw Charles Malik Whitfield, who's on a thousand things now, he's done a lot of television, and Jose Zuniga works all the time too in television. They were on a show together as cops. And so on my Facebook page, I put a picture of me with Robin. I cut Robin Williams out, but I put myself as a cop with those two, my sons in a sense. So I'm a very, it's been exciting to do that. And also, listen, I believe it's part of what we're supposed to do, that I'm part of a legacy. I studied with Strasberg and with Adler. Strasberg received directly from one of Stanislavski's students. Stella went back to Russia to work with him. So this goes back to the turn of the century in the 1890s. It came in the 1920s to the United States with Boleslavsky's American Lab Theater. Strasberg learned it there, and I studied with Strasberg. So in other words, there's a historical lineage, historical responsibility for the work. To Strasberg's work was revolutionary at the time. His book that he wrote that was released after his death is called A Dream of Passion, because his dream was to bring real truth, the kind of truth that shakes up an audience to watch, that moves you, so you don't say, oh yeah, that was good, but you say, I know that experience, I know that frustration and pain. So I have a great responsibility and a lineage to the truth in acting. And then I also have a great, because of my grandmother's prayer back in 1941 in a DC hospital on her knees, I have a great spiritual lineage as well. And so I combine them both to try to encourage, to come alongside, to even stand in the way when I need to, if someone's going the wrong way, or a way that I perceive won't be for the best good. We all have choices.
Yes. And what a beautiful full circle completion that now you teach at the Strasberg Institute, a place where you had studied, and just that full circle how just meaningful I imagine that feels for you.
Yes, yes, very much so. And I taught there for almost 6 years. And it's interesting, there's a story I don't normally share, but I will share it with you. During that time at the Strasbourg Institute, very often we think that we just chose our path, right? We think, I decided to do this. Because I started teaching because I was doing like at least a film a year in the 80s, and maybe two, but I very often would run out of money. So a friend of mine was teaching at Strasbourg. I was like, Tom was in class with me. Tom Yusin he was on Guiding Light. I was like, Tom Yusin, you know what? I'm gonna talk to them. And I went over there and they offered me a position. So the teaching I thought was my idea. During my teaching, this story is crazy, but I had a dream, and it was a vision. I had an open vision. It was so clear. I remember every detail. I don't remember my dreams that much. I remember it was in color. I remember every detail, and it was absolutely frightening. But the culmination of the four sections of this dream, at the end of it, God said, tell them about my light and warn them about the powers of darkness. And you know what my answer to that was, Lisa?
No.
No.
Okay.
I was like Jonah. Because I knew the story of Jonah, how Jonah had been swallowed by a whale because he didn't want to go minister love to the Ninevites because they were horrible to the Jews. They were horrible. So why would I go to my enemies and offer them, and you're going to be gracious probably, God, and forgive them? I'm going the other direction. You get swallowed up. So anyway, I was told to do that, and my response was no, and this is private.
Yes.
Now, I realized later, it's personal. It's not private, because if it was private, then it would have, no one would know, because it would have stopped in the first century Israel with the 12 apostles, the 120 disciples. It would have stopped. So I, for 3 years, Lisa, I literally ran from this, and then things would happen where I was in Central Park, and the dream was acted out for me. Parts that can't be acted out. It was impossible for this to be acted out. It was acted out in the most startling way. And I was still running. And then finally, my grandmother told me, again, grandmother Lillian Weeks, she told me that there'll be times, son, she said, when you read the scriptures, where the page will light up almost. Like, you'll know. It's a rhema word. It's a revealed word for you. I said, okay. Well, that's what happened. I was reading the scriptures as that was my habit. I used to read every day because it's life giving, really. There's actually energy in it and life and light that it's hard to realize. I've seen it a few times clearly, but I know it's there. And so I'm reading the scriptures and it said this. It was from, I think, Ezekiel. It said, son of man, I've appointed you a watchman for the house of Israel. And it said, and if I tell you to, you warn a man of his sins, but if you don't warn him, if you warn him and he turns, cool. Or if you warn him and he doesn't turn, okay, you're good. But if you don't warn him, like I tell you to warn him, I will put that blood on you. The blood will be on your hands. And I literally, I think I was in my apartment in Queens, Astoria, Queens. I threw my hands up in the air. I said, I surrender. I give up. Okay. And as soon as I did that, Lisa, I was helping students in ways I didn't know I could help them. Like I was in a class. I don't think it was the Marilyn Monroe Theater, but it was upstairs theater, third floor. And we do a lot of emotional exercises, and we train people's instruments so that they can maintain relaxation while they are emotional, which is not easy to give it that sense of ease and easiness. So we're training, and people are crying and doing emotional memory exercises and different things. There's one student named Katarina from Sweden, and I looked at her, and I was like, I'm supposed to talk to her. I was like, oh, here we go again. You're not going to tell me what to say? I'm like, literally, I have an argument with God. You're not going to tell me what to say? You're not going to tell me. I'm going to just have to guess again. I always would guess right, but I just was frustrated with that. So I said, you know what? I'm not saying anything. And so the class is over. She's walking toward the door. I'm talking with another student. And as she gets to the doorway of three main, I said, Katarina. And she turns. I said, wait, hold on. And I was thinking, why did you do that?
Yes.
And she comes over afterwards, and I said, Katarina, I said, I know that I can sense that you're going through something. I mean, I know you're a long way from home. And I said, you know, if you need to talk to someone, please reach out to some of your classmates to talk. And I said, if you want, you can call me. We can talk as well. And then I heard myself say this.
Mm-hmm.
But most of all, God wants you to know that he doesn't want you to do it alone. And she tears started rolling down her cheeks, Lisa. And I said, what's going on? What's happening? She says, yesterday, I wrote a letter to God and asked him to send, getting emotional, think about this. She said, yeah. I asked him to send someone to help me. And I said, here I am.
You were the answer to her prayer.
I was the answer. Yeah, I was the answer to her prayer. And that happened more than once there where one student was trying to kill himself. He was drinking himself. He was only 19, but I saw the dark circles. And he was drinking Old English 800 and a pint of vodka every night. And he was taking him down. And I got him. I invited him to church and he turned his life around. But listen, the problem it caused is this. This is the part I don't tell. Is that it caused problems between me and the administration. So here I have received a clear as anything in my life that yes. I'm supposed to help these students. I'm supposed to tell them. I mean, I don't preach to the class, but even if I did, it's not illegal. It's a private school. I don't teach. Mm-hmm. I don't preach. I never did that. I always would. Oh, that one. Okay. Oh, this one is struggling. Okay. This one I can encourage. I did that a thousand times, but they started threatening me at the Institute.
They said,
you can't tell people. You can't tell people about God. We can't recommend doctors and you can't tell about God. I heard that students are coming to church, you're getting baptized. And I said, but there are students that are in pretty bad shape. And she said, well, I'm telling you right now, you can't continue to do it. And I remember instantly, Mom, I didn't say it though. I remember what Peter and I think John said when they were confronted by the Sanhedrin, where he says, you know, preach no more in this name of the Messiah, that Jesus, the Messiah, never. And they said, we cannot help but to say the things that we have seen and heard. You have to judge for yourself whether it's better for us to obey you or God. And so in my mind, I was like, yeah, you gotta choose. Obviously, it's better to obey God. I got it. And I even called my mother, the miracle woman. And she said, son, she said, if they told you to stop talking about God, then you should do it. I said, but Mom, I was clear. And many times people that have heard, gotten messages from the people have had were persecuted for that. But I'm not doing it like that. I don't want to go through stuff, but I heard it so clearly. And she said, okay, son. And it happened a few times where she told me to, you know, as a mother, she was worried. And so finally, it was a Saturday. And again, like grandmother had said, the scriptures lit up. I was going through a lot. The administration was coming down on me. I had other things going on. It was a really rough time.
Yeah.
I was on the edge of my bed at Manhattan Plaza, which is the actors building, the arts building on 43rd and 10th Avenue in 17G. And I was on my knees on the side of the bed and I was weeping. I said, oh, Lord, you have to talk to me. You have to tell me what to do. What should I do, Lord? And I opened at one finger. I opened up to Revelations 3:7, which I already quoted a little bit. And it said, and I remember I read it. I was like, oh, my God, that's for me right now. It says, he who holds the key of David. What he opens, no one can shut. What he shuts, no one can open. Behold, I've opened a door for you that no one can shut, though because you've kept my word and you've not denied my name. And I remember I sat there for a while going, and I said, what does that mean?
Wow.
What is that? You're going to give me another cryptic message? What does that mean? Open what you can shut. I show up at Strasbourg on Monday, and I was going on vacation on Wednesday. So I had 2 days to teach, and I was going to go to Austria. And Vicky Crane, Anna Strasbourg's sister, said, Kirk, come into the office. We told you that we wanted you to stop talking about God, and you haven't done it. Are you going to stop talking about God? I was like, no, I'm not.
Wow.
She said, well, I'm sorry. We're going to have to let you go. I said, okay. I said, but I have to let you know, Vicky, it's important for you to remember this. I didn't do it on my own. I didn't just choose to do this because I had a clear vision. I didn't go into it with her, with a kid, the Dickens out of her. I said, I had a clear vision. It was very clear. And I said, students, Roman Morocco, or this one, or Katarina, and I started going, Sashiko from Japan. I said, these are students that were on the edge, and I was going to each one of them. A coincidence? No, I don't think so. And she looked at me, and to her credit, Lisa, her eyes were wide, and she said, were you supposed to teach tomorrow and then leave Wednesday? I said, yeah, tomorrow is my last day before I leave for vacation. She said, let me think about this overnight. Because she understood. As
something spoke to her.
So, yeah, it said, listen, if Gamaliel said about, because they were going to, after the disciples were continue to preach, they said, we're going to kill these guys. And then Gamaliel, who was one of Paul's teachers, he sent them out there and he says, listen, men of Israel, he said, elders of Israel, he said, in times past, there have been people that have called themselves prophets. They've risen up, they've gotten disciples, and then they've all ended up dead. So if it's of human origin, it's going to fail. So leave these men alone. But if it's of divine origin, you may find yourself fighting against God himself. And they let the disciples go. And so Vicky gave me another day. I came back and she again said, she said, I'm sorry, we got to let you go. And I said, okay, I'm leaving for vacation tomorrow. And so I remember I was at the front desk and a student was walking by into what they call the Marilyn Monroe Theater, where Lee used to teach his classes. I taught in it too. And this guy, he stopped in the lobby and he looked around and he said, something's different around here. And he walked into the room. And because I did that, I was, again, put in a situation where prayer was going to be important. And I remember I got my unemployment check, right? I was, because they took my, they didn't pay me my vacation pay because they said I quit because they couldn't fire me. And Anna had just complimented me 2 weeks before about how great a teacher I was. She came in my classroom, interrupted the class, and started clapping. And everybody stopped and looked at her like, oh my gosh. And she then she walked out because she was in Lee's office and she could hear the class. So she couldn't say she fired me because I was a bad teacher. So she had to say I quit. And I told them that on the phone. They hung up on me. They were screaming at me. I get my unemployment check. And guess what it says, Lisa? It says, because what? It says, because they told you to not talk about God and you did not listen, you are not eligible for unemployment benefits. And I remember I went to sleep that night, true story, in my apartment in Queens on my day bed. I had my clothes on because I was sad. And I said, I'm always very honest. I was always very honest with God. I still am. I said, Lord, I am so sad right now and disappointed. I said, but you know what? I still trust you. Mm-hmm. And I went to sleep with the letter in my hand. I woke up to a phone call. Hi, Kirk. It was Henderson Hogan, my agent at the time. Hi, this is Henderson Hogan. Kirk, they made an offer on the Five Guys Named Mo Broadway musical that they're going to take on the road for a year. It pays $19.50 a week plus $5.81 per diem. And it went on. It was like just a crazy deal. I was like, I didn't remember auditioning for that. And so then I understood what I open, no one can shut. What I shut, no one can open. You shut the door at Strasburg. For my career literally to start. Because during that, by the way, I should tell you that during the years when I wasn't listening, when I didn't want to do it, I was jammed up and stuck, like just a clogged pipe. I did one film, The Return of Superfly, did some stage work, but I couldn't seem to move forward. And as soon as I did what I was supposed to do, and then I paid the price for it, the door opened. And as a friend of mine said, when God closes one door, he always opens another.
Always.
Sometimes it's hell in the hallway as you're waiting between the doors opening and closing. But I was very happy that, you know, we all can say how great it is after it happens. But for you to have faith when you see nothing, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And I had evidence that God, because I knew that I was there as a miracle, even that I was alive. And all the things that had happened, I knew that somehow God was going to come through for me. And I'm still standing on those promises today as I, you know, revival's coming out soon. And it's Lisa, it's the role of a lifetime.
Well, I want to jump in to say that I appreciate you sharing the story you just shared, because I think it leads us right into how I would love for you to share with us after our commercial about this role for you being Simon Peter, how powerful and emotional and just like, wow, like, I just can't wait to hear about that. Do you mind just holding up for 60 seconds? And I'll be right back.
No.
Thank you.
Indeed, listening is the new reading. With Audible, you can listen to an unlimited amount of books at home, in your car, at the gym, anywhere on the go. With over 180,000 audiobooks to choose from, for you, the listener of All Things Therapy, Audible is offering you a free audiobook download and a month-long subscription for you to try them out. Visit audibletrial.com/allthingstherapy now. And enjoy.
Do you want to help yourself and friends find a purpose in life?
Then you are in the right place and be a part of the crowdfunding campaign of patreon.com/allthingstherapy
with Lisa Tahir as she initiates a one-on-one interaction with inspiring authors, healing experts, and spiritual directors.
Join the League of Heroes of this generation by contributing your quota between $1 up to $100 per month
at patreon.com/allthingstherapy.
And let's make the world free of suicide, poverty, depression, and in all, make the world a better place for everyone.
Welcome back to all of you listening. I am with actor, singer, and composer, Kirk Taylor. Kirk, during the break, I got a little tearful because I also appreciate the story you shared about being in that interim period, as you called it, hell's hallway, and just how vulnerable, how uncertain we can feel and just wanting to know what is our next step or when is it coming.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've been in a place like that, spending the last 3 years writing a book, spending more money than I ever thought I could come up with, and just putting everything into this self-help book about healing our core wounds through self-forgiveness and spirituality and personal responsibility. And just I email myself every few days. There are these Dear God. I write Dear God and I write to him.
Oh,
and then I write back to myself, like, Dearest Lisa. And just the other night, I was like, Dear God, what is going on? Yeah, like, I need a miracle. I need you to show me, like, and I felt inspired to reach out to have my promo sheet updated for my agent, to reach out to more publishers yesterday. And just today, my agent called and said, there is an amazing publisher that loves your manuscript and is recommending it next week. And we'll be back in touch with a contract if that's where they go.
Whoa.
And I feel like just right before I called you for our show. So I feel like I had my really wonderful breakthrough, you know, and it just is like, okay, yes, God, thank you. So I appreciate you sharing one of your moments in life and the door that opened.
And I appreciate you drawing that story out for me. I've done a bunch of interviews. I've never shared that story.
Thank you.
Because you drew it out. You, first of all, you come prepared and you come with such a encouraging heart. So I can see why people would gravitate to you that's part of your gifting and part of the anointing on your life.
Thank
you. Massage the heart.
Absolutely. So please tell us about your role as Simon Peter in Revival and just everything, since it's coming out next Friday.
Yeah. Oh, when you first announced that at the beginning of the show, I just started smiling. It's like, wow, it's really coming out, because it's been a very difficult labor of love. We started shooting this in 2013. And so because of starts and stops, the budget went up. We started at a very low budget. We went up, not super high, but it quadrupled. So it was slowed down, which meant that we had to shoot in spurts. We'd shoot for 1 year, and then we'd come back the next year, and then the next year, and then the next year. But in terms of getting it, what's really significant is that it came again through a God nod, a God wink. A divine finger saying, yes, son, yes, this is for you. My wife was the script supervisor on the show, and my friend John Baum was one of the associate producers. And between the two of them, they started pitching me to different people. Rochelle was bold enough to go right up to Harry Lennox. Harry Lennox, of course, wrote and is starring in this Punctious Pilot, and it was his passion project. He wrote it for stage, and it turned into a film. So she went right up to Harry Lennox, and she said, Harry? He said, hi, Rochelle. He said, my husband is an accomplished actor. And she mentioned some film projects. And she said, and he is a very, very strong singer. And he's like, oh, let's bring him in. And so within a short period of time, I was right before Danny Green, the director, and Albana Dodeva, one of our other producers. And I didn't even audition. And then it came down to which role. And they were going to give me the role of Andrew. And I remember Andrew doesn't sing, because I've been waiting for an opportunity to come back full circle with musicals. I started in musicals, and I went away from that because as a method actor, I wanted to be taken seriously. So I didn't want them to think I was just, quote unquote, a musical performer. Mm-hmm. These days it crosses over. But back then it was sort of like, you do Broadway? Oh, you're a musical? Okay, right. We want a serious actor. So I didn't tell them I sang for a while until I did the Five Guys Named Mo show. So here we are back again, and it's not a singing role. And I was like, oh, man, Andrew's arc is, he's good. It's good. It's okay. And then they called me a day later and said, Kirk, you have the role of Simon Peter. I said, that's a singing role, right? They said, yes. You have there's a trio. They sing a song called the Doubting Thomas song. And so I've gotten the role of Simon Peter. And I'll tell you that what I've seen clearly at this point, my life prepared me to do that role. Not only my training as an actor, as a coach, but also my spiritual life and the things I experienced. I know the soaring achievements, you know, great success that I've had, and I know dismal failures where things didn't work out well, whether I was cut out of the film or I failed in this area or another area, I knew the highs and the lows, and that's Peter's story. He was a daredevil. He's one of the pillars of the church. He's the only guy we know other than Jesus who walked on water. We talk about the fact that he sank, but he got out there and took some steps, and nobody else in the boat had courage to do that. So Peter was a courageous man, and also he was fearful and flawed, just like I am, just like we all are. And so I was able to take some of the experiences from my life and personalize it. I did a lot of research. I mean, method actors are known for, you know, out of the loins of Strasberg and Adler, were known for doing exhaustive research. And I read everything I could about first century life, fishermen. And then I found a writing of a Greek historian from the first century. I don't remember his name. It begins with an H. Hegiaphus or something like that. And he described a vision that had been handed down that Peter had of him finally being convinced that Nero was going to kill him. I believe it was in Rome, but he was leaving the city because his friend said, Nero has already said he's going to kill you. You have to leave. And so he finally decided to listen to them. They didn't want him to be martyred and killed for no reason or prematurely. And so as he was leaving the city, he saw a vision, open vision, like I had, of Jesus walking past him into the city. And he said, Lord, and he turned, he says, Lord, where are you going? He said, into the city to be crucified again. And it was written that broke Peter's heart, because here he is trying to save his own life. Here he is thinking about himself. And then I understood because Peter was crucified upside down. And I always wondered why he did that. And this made me understand, because he said, don't crucify me the way Jesus was crucified. He says, do me upside down. I don't deserve to die the same way as the Lord. And so when I got that sparked something in my heart where I understood, I said, I understand that shame. I understand that embarrassment. I understand that longing to do better, to represent well. And we don't always accomplish that. And so I was able to bring that and personalize things in Peter's life that allowed me. And then at one point I got a beautiful email from Harry Lennox, and I will always treasure it, where he sent me a clip of the denial scene, which we shot first, by the way. I'll tell you that in a second. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. We shot that first. And it was a very painful scene to do, a very deep scene to do. And he said, Kirk, your work in this scene brings me to tears. Wow. And when I watched it, I started crying for him. Not for me, for Peter. Like, it was one of two instances where I felt that I had kind of gotten away from myself, had transcended. I'm using myself personally. It's always you as an actor. But I wasn't just watching myself. I was watching Peter. Mm-hmm. And my heart was broken for him. And I believe it translates, and there's some beautiful moments in this. And Simon Peter, we call him Cephas, which is his Aramaic name. It also means rock, just as Peter does. Jesus said, I'll build my church upon this rock. So Cephas is the Aramaic version of that, the language they would have actually spoken there in the first century. And I'm able to bring some truth to this. I'm able to bring some passion to this. And I think that it translates, you know, the things I was trying to accomplish. And I'm really trusting that audiences will be moved by
feel that.
Well, it will start a conversation. It'll start a consideration. It will start a search, you know, for the seeker, for the seeking hearts.
What a beautiful film for you to be in.
I mean, I cannot tell you how I scratch my head. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm playing Peter. I'm playing Cephas in Revival. I have one of the leads. On the script, I was number three. And even in this film, I'll tell you another thing I don't share. But in this film, because of the company that took over to do distribution, they controlled who was going to be put where. And even though I'm number three and have the best arc in the film other than Jesus, I mean, it's Peter, think about him walking on water, about him acknowledging that Jesus is Messiah, and then denying him. It's a crazy arc. But I looked on the poster and on the website, and I was like, my name's not on the poster. I had my own card in my own, my name wasn't on the poster for Full Metal Jacket, but I had my own card. This one, my name is not on the poster, and I don't have my own card. So again, it's like I was a little shocked by that, and a couple other friends that, but the company was saying, okay, who's working more currently right now? Oh, Roland Buck III, who's on Chicago Med. Well, we know it's only his first film, and Kirk, it's your 30th film, but we're going to put him on. We're going to put, and so they made those decisions. And at first, I was hurt. And then I remembered something. Lisa, talking about the God nods, the God winks.
Yes.
I went to Sundance in a film called, my first time at Sundance, MacArthur Park, directorial debut of Billy Worth. People know him from The Lost Boys and other things. Wonderful actor, great guy. And I played a cop in that. When we got to the screening, I watched that, you know, the thing started, and I was watching myself. And again, I had that feeling. I said, oh my gosh, I believe this guy. Mm-hmm. I believe this cop. This is a cop. I'm watching a cop, Officer Randolph Davis. And so when the film concluded, the credits start rolling. I'm not in the credits. So on this current film, I'm not featured in the credits where I should have been. And, you know, I learned some lessons about what to do regarding contracts. But I just never imagined that they would do that. I never had to fight for just a basic thing. So my name's not in the credits. They tell me they had to rush to get to Sundance. They apologized. So at the second screening in L.A., again, you know, I brought my friend Michael Jai White, who's from my hometown of Connecticut, and Gina Bolton and other friends. And the film starts. And again, I like that role. I love that cop. He's doing a great job. But then when the credits rolled, I literally dropped my head because I was, you know, I was embarrassed. It was like, I don't know why they would do that, but it hurts. We walk out of the theater. I shake it off. I'm talking to Mike and Gina. And out of the corner of my eye, I see Sidney Poitier coming. And I said, oh my gosh, that's right. His daughter, Sidney Tamia Poitier, is in the film. And he's coming kind of toward me. I said, is he coming here? And he walks right up to me, Lisa. And he says, excuse me. Did you play the cop? And I said, oh, yes, Mr. Poitier, I did. He says, I watched you very closely, and I wanted you to know I did not know if you were a real cop or if you were an actor. That's meant to be a compliment to you. I thought to myself, that cop should be an actor. And I said, sir, you have no idea how much that means. I said, they forgot my name in the credits. And he interrupted me, and he says, where you're going in your career, that will not matter. The presence you bring to the screen. And at that point, Lisa, I literally lost.
It was hard to hear. Yeah.
I couldn't hear any more compliments.
It was so much. It was so much.
It was too much. I watched his lips move after that. And I thought to myself, this is Mr. Tibbs. Because I'd seen him first in the Heat of the Night. And he walked away, and I turned to Gina. I said, I hope you heard that, because I conked out after the presence you bring to the screen. But that was a God nod. That was a God wink. That was another finger point saying, yeah, I got you, son. And so with Revival, where I realized I wasn't really given the credit that I should be given, I wasn't giving the placement I should be giving, I remembered the Poitier story. This is about a month ago. And I started weeping like a baby. Because then I realized how much I was really hurt by it. But I also realized that that message, just as often prophecies will be for two seasons, three seasons, it will refer to different periods of time. I realized that prophecy, that word he gave to me about my acting, the compliment of compliments, for an actor of his ilk, one of the great actors of any generation, to tell me he didn't know if I was acting or if I was a real, that he thought I might have been a real cop. That was the compliment of compliments. And I realized that compliment given years before was for now as well.
And
God was again saying, I got you. I got you. Don't worry. There's going to be a nod. I don't know what the nod's going to be in Revival. I don't know what the wink is. I don't even know. I'm in the studio now recording some of my music. I sing. I'm writing stuff. I'm writing scripts. I'm still coaching. I'm doing different things. But I don't know what the next thing is acting-wise. But I know who does know. And I know I'm in his hand. And so, again, you and I are going to – now we have talked about it. I'm telling you up now in the audience listening that there will be a wink and there will be a nod. I can guarantee it. I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know what door is going to open up. But he opens the doors and he shuts the doors. So I'm giving him charge of that.
And I want to tell you, Kirk, that not only do you bring presence to the screen, but you bring presence to life itself. And it's been such an honor today to have this time together. I'm so grateful.
Thank you, Lisa. I am too. I'm really, I feel like I just went through a session with you.
Well, I look forward to meeting you and staying in touch. Thank you for taking your time today with us.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Yes. Okay.
And Lisa, if people wanted to stay in touch, if they
yes.
mentioned the website, I'm also at I am Kirk Taylor, K-I-R-K Taylor for Instagram and Twitter. And you told me about KirkTaylorOfficial.com and RevivalTheMovie.com is where they
Thank
can find out
that.
About the Revival film. Yeah.
Thank you for that. I got so caught up in what you were saying. Thank you for adding that. Yes. And just have the most wonderful day. And I look forward to seeing your film, to seeing Revival.
Thank you, Lisa. I look forward to talking to you again.
Me too.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Everyone, that concludes our show for today. I was just with actor, musician, and singer Kirk Taylor. What an amazing man. And again, you know where to find him. You know where to find me, NOLA Therapy, KirkTaylorOfficial.com for him. And I am Kirk Taylor on social media, NOLA Therapy for me. And just all my love to you. And I look forward to being back with you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to All Things Therapy with Lisa Tahir, only on LA Talk Radio.